This is Offstage and On the Air performance number 893. My name, as it is on Wednesdays, is Elisa Sheps. I am joined by my guest co-host, the super duper Liz Ross.
Hey, how you doing?
And you're listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby. This show streams around the world on KOOP.org.
Hurry, hurry, and step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Yeah. Step right up. Feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh, yeah.
It is Wednesday, September 9th, 2026. On the show today, we have Chemistry Laboratories and Shaw Entertainment Group presenting their show, Treasure Island Reimagined. We're also going to talk to Austin Rainbow Theater and their show, The Recipe Box. And then later, we've got St. Edward's University, Mary Moody Northern Theater, and She Kills Monsters. And of course, we're going to have lively discussions of the world of theater in Austin, New York, Washington, D.C., Dallas, and Albuquerque, New Mexico. Don't go away. Liz Ross.
Yes, ma'am.
It is so good to see you. You are my guest co-host today.
Yes, I am, and I'm very excited to be here.
It's amazing. You also have a show on this this radio station.
I did. It was the Sex Ed radio show.
Aren't you still involved with ArtSpark, though? The ArtSpark Radio Hour?
I am not involved. I've just been on their show.
Okay. Never
before.
Mind. Forget
it's
I
Voices
ever said
of
anything.
Access now, actually.
Oh, did they change their name?
They did change their name.
All right, Voices of Access. I think that's apropos, as we say.
I did help get it up and going. But yes, it is a wonderful show.
Amazing. Well, I'm happy to have you here guest hosting. We're gonna have so much fun together.
Yes, we are.
Before we go on, I'm going to introduce our special guest here today, the incomparable Jason Newlander. Hi, Jason.
Hey!
It is so good to have you here.
It's great.
It's been a while since you've been on this show.
It has been. It's been a while since I've done theater.
Well, okay. But I hate to break it to you. I guess it is theater. This is radio.
Oh, that's true. I have done my share of radio, but I haven't done this show because I haven't done theater.
Yeah, we haven't done theater in a while. Yeah. Well, good. Well, we're gonna have plenty of opportunity to get your theater chops back. I have to warn our listening audience for just a moment that we will be interrupted, and you're gonna hear us do some weird shtick, seemingly out of the blue. But just know that there's a reason. So just know that will happen at some point. In the next 10 minutes. Did you recognize that song that we played? Either of you?
I did not.
It is from the Broadway musical, except this is the Argentina version, Come From Away.
Oh my gosh, I just watched that actually too.
Yeah, I actually, I watched it. I watched it last night. It is available to stream. And Come From Away, if you don't know it, have you ever seen it, Jason?
You know, I haven't seen it, but my wife just saw Zach's production of it.
I heard it was good.
And she said it was great.
Yeah, it's the most popular show this year to be done.
That's what I've been hearing.
So it tells the story of 9/11, some 200 airplanes were diverted to Gander, Newfoundland. And it's just a beautiful show. Have you seen it?
I've seen both. Saw it touring at Bass, and then I also saw it, it played after another show I was watching, and I just watched the live stream, and actually beautiful.
It's a good pro shot of it.
Yes.
But nothing, that show really lends itself to watching it live.
Yeah.
And it's sort of just a wonderful energy. Well, in 2 days is the anniversary of 9/11. Mm-hmm. And that I happened to be in Canada during 9/11, and was scheduled to fly home on the 13th.
Wow!
So I ended up driving, which ended up being a mistake.
Oh my gosh!
It took about 8 hours from at the border from the beginning of the bridge to getting across. It was like 8 hours just for that stretch of a mile, I'd say. It was crazy. Where were you, Jason?
Well, you know, my wife and I were moving that very day.
Mm.
I mean, I think for all of us who were grownups on that day, we remember it so clearly how the events unfolded, you know. But yeah, we were moving, and I was in the middle of a production with Salvage Vanguard Theater that we were working on that, by bizarre coincidence, was about an airplane crash.
Oh, my God.
Oh, man.
And so there was, I mean, I remember having the discussions of whether we were going to continue to do the show. I was in a meeting when it all kind of really went down. And my wife was at the house trying to direct people who only spoke Spanish to help her with the boxes that she was trying to get into this truck. Anyway, what a day. What a day for all of us.
Amazing.
What a day for all of us.
You're slightly younger than Jason and I. Do you remember where you were?
I do. I remember that I had actually just come out of the bathroom, and I was I saw the TV at home, and because I believe it was right before school, and my stepdad was there, and we were just kind of. We couldn't really grasp the totality of what happened,
yeah.
Because it was so far away from us, and it was so shocking, and it just didn't seem real, and it was very disorienting. And then I think I had to go to school,
yeah.
And that was really strange to then have to proceed throughout the rest of the day where everybody was having very different reactions to it.
Okay, this is going to seem like a crazy non sequitur, but I need to say that I know where the signal is.
Where's the signal?
I don't know where the signal is.
Oh.
That's what I wanted to say. Thank you for sharing. That was a little shtick that we did, like kind of... Not great timing talking about 9/11.
That was bizarre. I mean, I'll just say it. Like, I'm going to take the role of the people listening right now and not in the studio. That was amongst the most strange things I've ever seen in my entire life.
Yeah, I actually tried to signal that we should wait, but it didn't work.
No.
Anyway.
And he's walking away applauding at the same time. And I'm like, that was a very, I knew that as soon as we started talking about this, that this was going to happen. And I was
crazy.
Like, oh, man.
anyway, at some Magic's Theater, Come From Way has been done a lot, being the 25th anniversary of 9/11. 146 productions are being staged around the world. And there's a wonderful article in the New York Times. It's a photo article that shows a lot of the production, specifically the one in Gander. It's been done every year in Gander for the past, I think, 5 or 6 years.
Wow.
4 years. And they have a 392-seat theater on Airport Boulevard, right down the street from the airport. And they do it there every year, and it's gotten bigger and bigger and bigger. As a matter of fact, their budget for this year's show in Little Gander, $1.4 million.
What?
I know.
What? That's incredible.
Interesting thing is, remember, this is Canada. It's subsidized
But it's Canadian dollars, so.
Oh, so yeah, that's different.
Yeah.
they get government grants to cover this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
They do.
Yeah. But Hugh Jackman is in that show, right?
I don't think so.
No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, okay.
I was going, he would
maybe
be.
Maybe
he is. Happily.
Anyway, it is directed by Gillian Keeley, who is a Newfoundland native. And it's one of the interesting things that, I don't know who said this, but it's an interesting thing, the brand for this show, because it's all about love, compassion, and caring for your fellow person that you have no right to, not that you don't have no right to, there's no reason for you to care for these people because they're all strangers. And it says, this person said, I'm trying to see who said it, Percy Farewell, the town's current mayor, said, it's a pretty good brand to be the poster child for kindness and compassion and generosity. I think that's
sweet. I love that.
And yeah. and I believe that all the characters, I was reading this because as soon as I watched it again this year, I started crying. And he's so beautiful. And I was reading up on it, and all the characters are based on true.
That's all real. Yeah,
it's all real. As a matter of fact, it came from a group, I forgot who it is, but they, 10 years after 9/11, they went to Gander and they interviewed all these people. And as a matter of fact, there's a Texas connection. The Kevins, the two characters named Kevin, that are a couple. One of them is from Texas.
Wow.
Austin, I believe, still lives here. And of course, we're going to run out of time. We're only going to talk about a couple of things. So I want to jump into the other stuff I want to talk about. I should say this, that the opinions expressed on offstage and on the air are not necessarily those of co-ops, board of directors, its volunteers, its employees, its, what are they called?
Sponsors.
But that's not the word. Any underwriters or anybody. It's just our crazy opinions here because, you know, theater is very controversial.
It is controversial.
It is indeed.
Because it's about love.
It's about love.
Yeah.
Very
love
controversial.
Very controversial these days.
Okay.
100%.
Plus, I think a play that is about the U.S. and Canada getting along is that also right now is quite controversial.
Yes, it is.
But yeah.
I remember I used to vacation at Lake America.
Oh, good Lord.
I know. Don't get me started. Have y'all switched to MapQuest?
No.
Because MapQuest is the only map company that did not change.
Gulf of Mexico?
Lake America.
What? They all changed it?
They've already changed it. Oh, like immediately, like within a couple days.
That is outrageous.
Lake America.
What a time.
It's Lake America if you're in the U.S. If you're in Canada, it's Lake Ontario. And if you're anywhere else, it's both.
I guess because whenever I've gone elsewhere, that's when I've looked at it.
Yeah. All right.
Oh, my God.
What time is it? Yeah, we're going to run out of time. Here's what I want to talk about. Well, the other thing is, do you know in New York, they have a program. I don't remember what it's called. It's the Public Works program that they do at the Delcourt Theater, where they have a whole bunch of regular folks working alongside of a few seasoned actors.
I don't know about this at all.
It's called, what's it called? Anyway, but it's always been shows. It's been Shakespeare. I believe they started with Twelfth Night. This year, it's an original piece called Public Record. It's 100 cast members, almost all of them amateurs, aged 7 to 84. There's a few professional musicians and dancers. They're not performing a classic, but telling their own stories as New Yorkers, which sounds really interesting. I talk about this every year that they do it because it's a whole bunch of people that are not theater people doing a show at the Delcourt. Which is a beautiful space. Have you ever been to the Delcourt?
Oh, of course, yeah.
Have you?
I have not.
You spent any time in New York?
I have, but like to visit or go see shows very short periods of time.
Well, you know, they do shows at the Delcourt Theater.
Yeah, because it's a theater.
And there's many theaters in New York.
And it just reopened. It's an outdoor theater. It's the Shakespeare Theater.
It's where
they
do Shakespeare in the Park.
Yep. And I haven't seen Shakespeare in the Park.
Yeah, I saw Kenneth Klein do Henry V there. It was amazing. And I'm not a fan of Shakespeare. Don't tell anybody.
Well, you know, I saw a production of Twelfth Night there with Anne Hathaway, which I thought was great that they cast Anne Hathaway in the Shakespeare show, you know, because was his wife's name.
It was indeed.
Yes.
But and she was honestly surprisingly good. But that production.
Did she play the what's her name? Tiburon, the fairy queen? Or was she one of the lovers?
No, Twelfth Night. So that's the one with. I can't remember the names of any of the characters, but
yeah,
it's with twins and they have to have to disguise themselves
as
each
twins.
Other.
Oh,
and
I think I was thinking of Midsummer Night.
Yeah. So, anyway, it was one of the funniest plays I've ever seen in my entire
Amazing.
Life. Yeah.
Okay. So here's the deal. We're running out of time, but I want to take a moment to talk about Tubu Fest.
Wonderful.
Tubu Fest is coming up in a couple of weeks.
Yes, it is September 24th through 26th at the Ground Floor Theater.
What is Tubu Fest?
It is a disability short fringe theater festival. We produce 12 original works written by playwrights with disabilities from all over the world.
Wonderful. And you are the founder of this festival.
Yes, I'm a co-founder and executive director.
Yeah. So it's amazing. So this is the third year.
Yes, it is.
And totally worth seeing. It's really heartening and wonderful to watch because not only are your playwrights mostly with disabilities, but a good portion of the actors
correct
also have disabilities. And it's quite heartening to see the amount of work and the quality of work that's done.
Thank you. And we also have a play co-directed by two blind directors this year. And one is co-directed by a deaf director, and there's a deaf-blind actress in it. And so we have a mixture of all kinds of people getting to know each other and creating community. All shows are live streamed, and to make it accessible to people who might not be able to make it into the space.
Mm-hmm. Where can folks go to get more information?
They can go to tubufest.com. That's TUBUFEST.com.
And TUBU is an acronym.
It stands for Theater by Us, for Us. For Us, yes. Theater for Us, by Us.
There you go. Okay, we just have a couple more things to talk about. First of all, do you know the movie 13 by 13 Going on 30?
Yes.
I've never seen it.
I think I saw it a long time ago.
But did you know there's a musical, 13 Going on 30?
Mm-hmm.
You did? Have you ever seen it or heard it?
No.
Well, actually, I don't know that it's been in this country. It was done in Manchester at the Opera House in 2025. Anyway, they have a cast album that just was released 2 days ago.
Oh, wonderful.
And at the very end of the show, stick around to the end of the show, you'll hear a song from it. And that's that. And the last thing I want to talk about before we go to break is The Fantastics, the show, the musical The Fantastics. Has anybody seen it? Heard of it?
Yes, of
course.
Been
in it?
I've never been in it.
Okay. Yeah. What about you?
I have not seen it, and I have not been in it.
Well, did you know it has Texas roots? Well, even more specifically, it has Austin roots.
I think I did know that.
Tom Jones and Harvey Schmidt were students at UT they wrote it.
That's right.
And one of my favorite stories about the Fantastics is, oh my God, why did I just lose his name? He played El Gallo in the original. He's very famous, and he's passed away. Oh, darn it. We're not going to be able to do it because I forgot his name. This is what happens when you have my brain. But anyway, he was offered, nobody knew who he was. And if I could remember his name, you'd go.
But we still don't know who he is.
I know. I know. And Jason, that's my fault and nobody else's. It will come to me at some point within the hour. But anyway, he was offered a Broadway show or this little tiny musical done at the Sullivan Street Theater called The Fantastics, Jerry Orbach.
Oh,
okay.
And
wow.
he decided, so I would have gone for the Broadway show. He decided to do El Gallo and it changed his career.
Oh, well, yeah. You know, I didn't know that he was a musical theater guy at all. I had no idea.
Beautiful voice.
Yeah, I bet.
Go back and listen to the original. He sings Try to Remember, amongst other things.
What a song.
So it's the story of a boy and a girl and their fathers who want them to get together, but pretend to not want them to get together.
Aww.
And they orchestrated an abduction.
Right.
There was a song that used the R word.
Yeah.
It's no longer that. But anyway, they've done a lot of changes. But what's interesting is there's a new version. It's finally coming to Broadway. It's never been on Broadway. It is the longest running show in
ever.
In New York.
Yeah. Not as long as The Mousetrap.
Exactly. I was going to go there. But it's never been on Broadway. It's coming to Broadway. But it's the new version where instead of Matt and Louisa, it's Matt and Louis.
Oh.
And instead of two fathers, it's two mothers.
Wow.
One of the families is Latinx. And it's very, very exciting. And there's an article that I'm not going to get into now. I really want to. In the New York Times that talks about how, oh my God, I forgot his name. Harvey Schmidt and what's his name? Jones. I just said it a second ago. Anyway, Harvey Schmidt had passed away already, but was having him work on this new version. And he's kind of a typical straight man versus Harvey Schmidt, who is a closeted gay man or a not out gay man. I wish I could remember his name. This is just terrible. He did all these updates and he actually came, it was sort of like a coming to a realization himself
okay,
as
yeah,
he
yeah,
did
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because at first he said no, because they did say, you know, a lot of people have come to them and said, said we want to do it as a gay couple, and they said no for years and years and years, okay. And he finally said yes. Anyway, that's what I wanted to talk about, and we're going to go to break. And we're going to hear a little bit of the Fantastics. They don't have a musical recording of this new one. So there was a revival, I think, in 2001. And this is The Plum Is Too Ripe from the Fantastics. We'll be right back.
Take away the golden moonbeam. Take away the tinted sunset.
We are back. You are listening to Offstage and On the Air with Liz and Lisa. We're here on Co-op Radio 91.7 on your FM dial, even though most people don't have a dial.
Oh, so sad.
I have a dial. I have an actual radio in my bedroom that I turn on every single morning to listen to the radio to.
That is amazing.
Beautiful. Yeah. Much respect,
what station,
sir,
do you listen to? Be very careful as you answer this.
Well, Co-op, of
there
course.
There you go. Yeah. Jason Newlander, I'm going to reintroduce you for the real reason why you're here, which is to talk about your new show, which is called Treasure Island Reimagined. Similar to, and I think people will know you, or our audiences probably know you, not only as the founder of Salvage Vanguard, and I do remember now that we were talking about it right before we went on the air, that you did build that space, mm-hmm. that lovely space. I was actually at the very first, you did a show before it was completely built out. I forgot what it was.
Oh, yeah, that...
Was it
Jenny
was it Trouble Puppet
it.
Or something? No.
No. Oh, my gosh.
I don't remember what
Adam
it was.
Adam Sultan did the music, yeah. And I just don't.
And it was like it was halfway built out.
Yeah.
Ground Floor Theater did the same thing. We had a show. We had 50 and 50 before we were built out. So it was kind
your
of fun to do
space,
that.
By the way, I just want to say it. Like, I blown away was I
walking
well, that's
very
in
kind
there.
Of you to say. Yeah. But we're no SVT.
It's pretty special what
you
did.
I do agree. But also, Salvage Vanguard, I mean, not we can sit here and compliment each other all day long, which I like. but the what you built at Salvage Vanguard and the people that were involved with Salvage Vanguard and everybody was just super duper special. And it still goes on to this day, how people feel about SVT.
I agree.
I just remember when both you and the Off Center were closing around the same time and just... the amount of support, and then your final day, I saw the post, I was not there. So you did good. You've done good. Anyway, so we know you from SVT. We also know you from the Intergalactic Nemesis.
Yes.
And this is a new project.
This is a new project.
Tell us about it.
Well, it's called Treasure Island Reimagined, Jane Hawkins and the Pirate's Gold. And it kind of takes the format that the Intergalactic Nemesis evolved into, mm-hmm. which we call a live action graphic novel. But then I think it kind of takes it to the next level. So for those folks who remember the Intergalactic Nemesis, or for those folks who don't remember the Intergalactic Nemesis, that project started its life as this radio play that we actually did in this coffee house in downtown Austin back in the 90s. And then... over time, that radio play it morphed into a straight-up stage show done in the format of a radio play with three voice actors voicing all the characters, a Foley artist creating all the sound effects, and then the live piano score. And then that version, we got invited to bring it into the Long Center. And I felt like that in the big space there, and I felt like that venue is way too big for the intimate experience that we had created with the radio play version. And kind of in a flash in this meeting, I had this vision of comic book artwork being projected on a screen the size of the proscenium to kind of make a spectacle that could fill a space that big. And when I mentioned this to Cliff Redd, who ran the Long Center at the time, he said, well, that's funny. We just installed a cinematic projection system and we're looking for reasons to use it. So it was this amazing serendipity.
Oh, that's cool.
Incredible. And so I actually ran home from that meeting, and we had started to develop a comic book version of the Intergalactic Nemesis. And I took a little bit of that artwork and mixed it together in a little mini movie, basically, with the audio from the radio play, about a minute's worth. And I was like, I mean, my jaw hit the, I was like, I think I've just stumbled on something really cool. So we ended up premiering that show, that version of that show at the Long Center, and like 2,100 people came out to see it. And then that ended up touring the world, the entire English-speaking world, for most of the 2010s. And then I shifted into making movies for a little bit, and then COVID hit, and then we all were out of work. And then when I was trying to figure out what I was doing with my life, this is a couple summers ago, I was on a bike ride with this old friend of mine from the touring theater world, and he's like, you know, it might be a good time to think about doing a new touring show. And so one of the things that I thought was kind of missing for the venues, some of the venues that we toured to with Intergalactic, and we toured to 175 different venues
around
the world.
That's amazing.
Was that for some of them, they had a hard time bringing an audience, because what we had was this show with a title that most people had never heard, with a format that most people were unfamiliar with, and with a cast that no one had ever heard of. And so I thought if I was ever to do this again, I would take a title that was familiar to people just to make it easier for venues to be able to promote the experience of it. And so when this bicycle ride that I was on came along a couple summers ago where this conversation happened, I kind of immediately went and just made a list of adventure stories that I liked that were in the public domain. And that ranged from Treasure Island, obviously, was one of them, but also, you know, The Man in the Iron Mask, Three Musketeers, John Carter, you know, sci-fi mm-hmm. stuff from the early 20th century, that kind of stuff. And I brought this list back to my family, and my younger daughter, who was 18, as though this was happening, said to me, "Dad, you have to do Treasure Island." And the reason that she said that was I had read her Treasure Island when she was 9 years old, and that experience like totally stuck with her. We had a grand old time doing that together. And so not only then was it obvious that that was going to be the title, but more than that, I was like, you know what? I'm going to make the main character my daughter.
There you go.
So that was where the impetus to change Jim Hawkins, who's the main character in the book, to Jane Hawkins, who's the main character of my show. And what has been so cool about what was so cool about the writing process of adapting the book to this with this new protagonist was I did this research into the period to find out what was life like for girls and young women in the middle of the 18th century in England. And guess what? It wasn't the best.
Not so great.
Not good at all.
A young woman was expected to get married and bear the children of her husband. And that was her job. Yeah. Yeah. And then, of course, she had to toil and work and all that stuff to like maintain the house. And she literally, legally, was the property of her husband, and her stuff, anything that she had prior to marriage, became his property as well.
Correct.
So if you were a girl in that time and you dreamed of a life of adventure, which Jane Hawkins does, your prospects for doing that are basically none.
Yeah.
Except there were some young women who escaped away from polite society, if you will, and joined pirate ships. And this happened in
Bonnie and Mary Read.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. In real life, this happened.
Yep.
And a few of them went on to become captains.
Yep. That's
and
true.
So I was like, holy macaroni. Now here is something for some character development, right? Yep. So that all is integrated into my telling of this classic story.
So we're actually running out of time. But tell us what an audience might expect when they go to see the show.
So what we're doing in this new production is, and we're in the middle of rehearsals now, and I'm in it. So I can tell you it
is. You're performing in it.
Yeah.
Amazing.
It is a challenge and really fun. And I think the audience, honest to goodness, is, am I allowed to say? I'm not allowed to say that they'll be blown away. So I
sure,
won't.
Sure, they'll be blown away.
Okay, great.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm allowed to say that.
You're allowed to say
that. I think people
you
really.
You can't force them to come see it.
No,
but
I'm
you
not
can say if
twist.
They did, they'd
yeah,
be blown
if they
away.
Were to see it, they would be blown away. But yes,
they might have a good time.
So here's how it works: there are three of us on stage, and we are doing all of the character voices and all of the sound effects. And what we're wearing is we're not wearing like pirate outfits. We're wearing like F1 pit crew coveralls. Like you are getting to see how the mechanism of this thing runs under the hood. And then on the screen is over 1,250 individual comic book panels drawn by this incredible artist named Johnny Dombrowski, go move forward sequentially to tell the story visually. And honest to goodness, you are transported. And add to that this incredible orchestral score by Sam Lipman. The show itself runs about 2 hours with intermission. In that, there's about 45 minutes of supportive orchestral score underscoring it, like Lord of the Rings or Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Is it a live orchestra or is it track?
Well, right now it's pre-recorded, but we are in discussion with an orchestra about premiering it live with an orchestra in the 27-28
Wonderful.
Season.
Wonderful.
I would love to keep talking about this. We are plumb out of time. You're at the State Theater?
We're at the State Theater, and it's on the 18th and the 19th, which is next Friday and Saturday. The 18th is sold out, but there are still tickets available for two shows on the 19th, 2 p.m. and 7:30 p.m.
Where do folks go to get more information?
AustinTheater.org.
You could also go to TreasureIslandReimagined.com.
Yes, yep. And we're also touring the show, and there's video of what we're doing. And
I looked at your tour dates. It sounds fascinating.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome.
Well, Jason Newlander, thank you so much for coming on the show again. It's been too long.
Yay, I'm so glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
Don't be a stranger.
I will not be a stranger.
Amazing. So that was Jason Newlander and his show, Treasure Island Reimagined, Jane Hawkins and the Pirate's Gold, playing on the 18th and 19th at the State Theater. For more information, you may visit TreasureIslandReimagined.com. And this is from Treasure Island the Musical, and it's called Blow the Sails. We'll be right back.
Pull on the capstan, that's it.
We are back. You are listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and Liz. We have a jam-packed show today, and we're going to just jump right in and introduce our next guests, which is Austin Rainbow Theater. And their show, The Recipe Box. And here in the studio with us, and I've given them no prior instructions because they just walked in, is Chris Skinner. Hi, Chris. Oh, wait, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to turn on your microphone. What do you say to that? Say that again. And the microphone is down there, so you need it. You need to pull it up and put it right next to your mouth.
Hi, Lisa. How you doing?
Tip that up here. Okay, there you go.
Magical.
See, the magical thing about our show is that because I engineer my own show, I have to give instructions on the air. We have Emerson Collins. Hi, Emerson.
Hi, it's so exciting to be here.
I'm excited to have you here. And Cynthia Sanders.
Hi.
Hi. Well, now why am I not hearing you? Oh, because of that. Try that again.
Hi, Lisa.
The second take's always better.
Can I call you Cynthia Saunders?
You can. That's not correct.
I know, but you know, I'm trying to channel my inner John Ailey.
Okay.
And he would have called you Saunders.
Whatever you want to call me, just call me for dinner.
Anyway, speaking of dinner, y'all are doing a show called Recipe Box.
Yes.
Who wants to tell me what the show is?
I will.
Okay. I knew it was going to be you.
I mean, you know, if an opportunity arises, I just brushed my imaginary wig away from my face for everyone listening at home.
I noticed.
The Recipe Box is the newest play from Del Shores, the creator of the Sordid Lives franchise and a big Texas playwright. It is the story of a college professor whose husband leaves him for a younger student at the university and leaves behind his mother.
And so, I'm so sorry about that.
And so he is stuck with his mother-in-law, and the entire play takes place on a front porch through the course of a year. So we see as this friendship sort of develops through these unlikely pairing, and it's sort of a question of what happens when the damage that you thought was in your life turns out to be based on something that wasn't true.
Which is always.
So often. Yeah. It truly is. It's sort of a universal, like the assumptions we make, the things we think about our family and learning that their version of the story or some part of it is not what we thought it was.
And Del actually directed this production.
He did. This is only the second production, so it's a big regional premiere. We did the world premiere of it in February in Birmingham, Alabama at the terrific new theater there. And so this was really exciting for Del to really get to make sure that the play really works, that it really fits with a brilliant, different group of people. I mean, it's exciting to see how it lands differently in these incredible actors here in Austin. And it's been very special to be at the Austin Rainbow Theater.
Yeah, it's wonderful. And you're actually here at your Ground Floor Theater, so
yep.
I get to see a lot of it.
Yes.
You're also in it.
I am.
Are in it.
Yes, I am. Yes, and still even. I plan to come back this weekend even.
Oh, good.
Yes, I play.
Tell us who you play.
Said college professor Rick Sprague. He is a college math professor, and he has a great deal of damage from childhood. His mother passed early on, and that's really impacted the journey of his own life and his relationships, and he suffers from depression, and that sort of caused problems in the relationship that he has with the husband. So the other piece I really love about it is that there seems to be an antagonist in this play, and as you go along, you sort of discover that the real antagonist is life. You know, yeah. Our relationships are what they are with people, and it's the circumstances between them that it's. But it's never as simple as you did this or I did that, and that's why this is falling apart.
As a professor, what do you profess?
In the play, I am a math professor.
Oh, good. That's exciting.
Well, and hilariously, Del did write this part for me, which is really lovely. And the way he and I first met, I was doing a production of his play, Southern Baptist Sissies, in Dallas at the Uptown Players in 2005. He flew in to see that production and asked me to move to Los Angeles to be in the revival with Leslie Jordan. 6 months into that, I moved into his house with him and his ex-husband and his two young daughters. And I coached those girls and tutored them in math in exchange for rent.
That's
so
amazing.
That is where the like math professor part of this came in. I was a mathlete in high school.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
I'm not.
Sure. You know, we all have our journeys.
And Chris Skinner, tell us about your character.
So I play Joa. And as he mentioned, you know, he is initially could be perceived as a antagonist, but as in life, there are so many more nuances to these things. And the reason I identified with Joa was because, you know, I've had similar breakups, you know, and there were times when I was Rick and there were times when I was Joa. And I know what it feels like when you kind of lose that lust for life and maybe have those things that kind of slip over the years and maybe you're depressed and not fully being present in your relationship. And sometimes that can ultimately just not be enough to keep the relationship going. And
oh, very relatable.
That's on the flip side, I was that person in my life at one point. And so being on the other end of that through Joa kind of gave me a new perspective on my own life in that situation. And, you know, I can understand where he's coming from, because when I was the person who wasn't present in the relationship, I really felt it. And I was trying to change things, but I knew that he had deserved better. And so I'm able to understand why Joa feels that he deserves better in the same way. And that's just one of many things that kind of click with this character. And I think it's why you're able to, you know, he is kind of a jerk, but you also see where he's coming from a little bit. And it makes the relationships with the other characters feel a little more alive as well.
All good antagonists have that.
Right.
otherwise, they're not good antagonists, as I said the other day, but Iago notwithstanding. And Cynthia, you play the young ingenue.
Oh, that's sure. Right. No, actually, I play, from my point of view, the play is about this poor old woman who has had some reverses in her life through some weaknesses that she has, and she has been abandoned by her selfish little doo-doo head of a son, and she's stuck with her crybaby son-in-law. And she's got to come up with some way to ensure her that she can have a roof over her head. And she's very smart. She's not educated. She's very smart, very manipulative, and she's really everybody's mother.
And you are nonstop in this show.
Oh, yeah.
You are nonstop.
It's like getting on a freight train and you can't get off for the first act anyway. And then for him, it's for Emerson, it's the second act. He's on stage all the time.
And so what we're looking at 75% of the cast right here in the studio.
Yes.
Who's the 25% we're missing?
Chelsea Manasseri plays Una. Uh-huh. Una Levesque, who is Rick, my character's best friend since college. They've been on the entire journey together. She is a drama professor at school. They both teach at the university. And I love their relationship because it's one of those demonstrations that oftentimes the greatest love in our life is not a love relationship. It's a friendship relationship. Mm. And she's sort of been the rock that's pulled Rick through life and his depressions. I mean, I imagine them as this wonderfully delightful, extremely obnoxiously liberal duo, like bouncing their way through this small southern town, sort of being the annoying pair at the university as the professors. And Chelsea's just brilliant in it. She's a school teacher and couldn't join us today.
She's brilliant. She's brilliant generally.
Yes, in all of life.
Yeah. Well, so as we're talking about this, it sounds very heartfelt. It kind of sounds serious, but there's a lot of laughs in this show.
There is. It's one of Dell's greatest gifts. It's what I always call the laughter through tears, because life is that way. You know, you find moments to laugh at a funeral and moments to cry at a wedding, right? The complicated feelings sort of represent the best of our humanity. And this play is hysterical. His brain sort of snaps the way, as a writer, the same way all of ours do in real life, where you get distracted and off you go on a long tangent and you make it back. But it's hysterical. You know, Luanda's manipulation of Rick on the journey there, and that sort of woman with no filter on her mouth who, yes, had a gambling problem that she admits yet doesn't quite take responsibility for. The sort of oil and water they have on their way to finding a real friendship at the center of it, to me, is quite, quite hysterical.
Yeah. Yeah. Wonderful. Well, we are totally running out of time.
Of course.
Y'all are playing. When do you close? You're open now.
We are. We run through September the 19th, Thursday to Sunday this weekend, and Thursday to Saturday next weekend.
And where can folks go to get more information about the show?
If you're interested in more information, please visit AustinRainbowTheater.com.
Well, .org.
.org.
.org. It's okay.
Chris is on the board, so he's here to correct those things.
And you know what? Chris is on the board, but I'm just bored.
Oh my God.
No, I'm not. Are you kidding? I'm so and any of
I was going to say, I think a lot of words could be used for you, and I don't think that's one.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Thank you all so much for coming on the show.
Truly our pleasure. Thank you so much for what
thank you,
did.
Lisa.
Best wishes for the rest of your run. I know that it's been pretty full every night. So
yeah, the opening is just fully sold out.
I might want to think about going to get some information soon. Is my idea.
I think that's a great one.
Absolutely. Okay, great.
Well, wonderful. That was Emerson Collins, Chris Skinner, and Cynthia Saunders.
Thank you so much for coming.
Truly our pleasure.
Thank you, guys.
Okay, I'm going to do that again. That was Emerson Collins, Chris Skinner, and Cynthia Saunders, all of Austin Rainbow Theater's The Recipe Box, playing now through September 19th at Ground Floor Theater. For more information, you may visit AustinRainbowTheater.org. And it's all about food, which we didn't talk about. And this is from Waitress, It Only Takes a Taste. We will be right back.
It only takes a taste when it's something special.
We are back. You are listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and Liz, L&L.
Yes.
We are very alliterative, you and I, today.
Yes, we are.
Yep. Tell folks one more time before we move on about Tubu Fest, real quickly.
Tubu Fest is a disability short fringe theater festival that's at the Ground Floor Theater, September 24th through 26th.
And for information?
You can go to tubufest.com.
Tubufest.com. It's been jam-packed here. We're like bringing guests in and taking guests out. We have got a new set of guests right here. And this is from St. Edward's Theater, Mary Moody Northern Theater. And their show, She Kills Monsters, a really nice, pleasant title. and we have the director of the show, Marcus McWhirter. Welcome back, Marcus.
Thank you.
We always love having you here. We have Harper Schreiner Brown.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Thank you. Victoria Turner.
Hello.
And Norma De La Torre.
Nomar, actually.
Nomar, I knew it.
I knew that was coming.
We did that in our break, and I said, I'm not going to remember how to do it. And of course, as always, Jarrett Mallon is here. In the background, he is waving, which works really well on the radio. So, Marcus, this is a show called She Kills Monsters. What's it about? Wait, let me guess. It's about a female-identified person that commits homicide on monsters.
Exactly.
Okay. Thanks for being on the show.
Got it.
Perfect. That's a wrap.
Tell us what the show is.
The show's about Dungeons and Dragons. It's about healing. It's about a relationship between two sisters, and it's fabulous.
Okay. Well, thanks for being on the show. Wonderful. So it's about two sisters, and it's about healing. What are we healing from?
A death in the family. Mm-hmm. And the missing the opportunity to say goodbye when people are around, and the problems that causes, and the ways that this silly little game with math rocks and monsters can bring people together.
It's interesting. I'm looking at the Wikipedia page for it right now, and it says, and I didn't see this before, I just saw it now for the first time, that the show is based on Dungeons and Dragons, but that's not quite true, is it? Isn't it? Doesn't have Dungeons and Dragons in it.
Well, a little bit, yes. Okay. The show is kind of told from the perspective of the Dungeon Master telling the story. So right. What the audience is seeing is what players experience, seeing the story. We have huge dice on stage.
Well, of course.
And we
are they 20-sided dice?
There are. We have 20-sided dice, 12-sided dice. We have the whole 7-dice set.
Oh, good.
All handmade. They're really wonderful. And it's kind of really just like what players experience, but in the visual perspective of the audience, getting to see what that looks like, telling a story through Dungeons & Dragons.
Well, that's amazing. Victoria, who do you play?
I play Agnes. She is a 24-year-old teacher. She just lost her little sister, Tilly, and her family in a car accident. And she is able to get to know her sister by playing Dungeons & Dragons, which is a campaign that she left behind.
Uh-huh. And Harper, you play Tilly.
I do.
But Tilly's dead.
Yes, Tilly is dead.
How does that work?
Well, the game of Dungeons & Dragons really brings her back to life and her memory through her campaign that she left behind. No one was really supposed to be able to see this campaign, but it is what holds her memory true to her sister and reminds her of who her sister was and honestly teaches her sister, Agnes, about who she truly was as a teenager.
And now I'm afraid to say your name.
Nomar.
Nomar. That is not hard. Yes, yes. Exactly as it's spelled.
You know, you would think so, right?
You would think. Nomar, who are you playing?
I play Chuck. Chuck is this quirky high schooler. He really teaches Agnes about the whole world of Dungeons & Dragons and kind of brings her this relief, like as voicing her sister and stuff.
Wonderful. Well, I'm going to ask all of you this question, but I'm just curious for Marcus specifically. Have you played Dungeons and Dragons before yourself?
I've been playing Dungeons and Dragons.
Marcus and I are of a certain age, and Dungeons and Dragons wasn't part of my growing
up. It was part of mine since I was 6 years old, thanks to my older brothers.
What
did
you play?
I feel like I knew that.
What did you play? What was your race character or whatever you call it?
I played them all. My most recent character, so since I'm not going to say the year, but since 6 years old, my most recent character was a kobold paladin named Gek the Giant Slayer.
Gek the Giant Slayer.
Wow. Amazing.
Okay, now did y'all play Dungeons and Dragons before this show?
Yes.
No.
Yes, no.
I never have. Okay. This was honestly my first introduction to Dungeons and Dragons, and it's the best introduction. It makes me want to play so badly.
I have to take a little sidebar, or what I like to call a side tangent. I was a performer in a show 20 years ago, and the director was a big Dungeons & Dragons person, and she directed as a Dungeons & Dragons, but she was frustrated because none of the actors...
A foreign world.
And she got
the
very,
foreign
very
world.
Frustrated because she like, I want to roll a die and tell you what to do. And anyway, it didn't work for that.
And it didn't land.
It didn't land.
The dice have become a big part of our tradition in our show.
Well, yeah, that's amazing. So this actually, the show was done at Steppenwolf, amongst other places back in the day. Mm. I don't know. I thought that was interesting.
Do you feel like people in the audience have to have played Dungeons & Dragons understand the show?
Not at all.
No.
I think the whole story of grief and trying to like deal with the loss of your family, it resonates with anybody. And I don't think you have to understand Dungeons & Dragons at all to get it.
And Nomar, we didn't ask you what did you say you're the dungeon master?
Yes.
Amazing. How cool is that? And have you personally dungeon mastered before?
I have not.
Oh no, because you're one of the people that hadn't played before.
Yeah. So I technically have, but not a substantial amount to like say that I've played. But no, I've been around nerds my whole life.
You talk about the candy?
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah. So it was pretty easy to find him somewhere within me.
And are the three of you students?
Yes.
All three of you are students. Mm-hmm. Great. Are there, and oftentimes, Marcus, at St. Ed's, they act along some professional, some people call them professional actors. I call them shills. No. Are there professional actors involved in this show?
Yes. We have the fabulous Amber Quick.
Oh, my God.
I know. That's,
I know. She's so amazing.
She's a master class of an actress.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. That's you've other than me, you can't get it any better. no, Amber's amazing. So how have y'all enjoyed working alongside Amber?
Oh my gosh, it's amazing.
Amazing. Yeah. I mean, a lot of us have had the experience of working alongside these equity actors and had the privilege of doing so. And so she joined us a little later in the process, but immediately when she jumped in, she made us feel welcomed into her own space and her process, and is so easy to have chemistry with on stage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's one of the things that I like to talk about, especially when St. Ed's comes on, because of this program. And it's controversial in to some. Some people, I actually read an onstage blog where they were talking about they don't believe that professional actors should be working alongside of students. And I think that's totally wrong, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, agreed.
Yeah. So because y'all are learning, and I would argue that the professional actors also learn from you guys.
Totally. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. What else do I need to know about the show before I send you on your way? Because we're running out of time. Anything? Tell us about it. You're done. This is done in the round.
Yes, it is. Yes. Originally, this show, I mean, we've talked about it a lot. There's like very fast scene transitions. And so you're like, oh, this is meant for a proscenium stage. But this show in the round is truly so immersive with our set and how we combat on the stage and how we just move throughout the space. Mm-hmm. I can't wait for audiences to see it.
Are y'all seniors?
No, I'm a sophomore.
Sophomore?
I'm a junior.
And I'm also a junior.
Okay.
Did y'all get to help with making the dice?
Yeah, so we do work calls at our theater. So we all students get an opportunity to help build, paint, and really create the world for our audience. I know we had, like a team of 10, 12
so many
students who were making the dice by hand, and they're insanely, like, they're just amazing. They're just so incredible. Mm-hmm. And like everyone who had a hand in it is so proud of their work and gets to share that work with the audience.
That's amazing. When does this show play?
September 17th through the 27th.
And then where can folks get more information?
You can look up Mary Moody Northern Theater and go on our website, and you can look at all of our tickets and choose what date works best for you.
Great. And that website, by the way, is stedwards.edu/theater.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm so looking forward to seeing it. Hopefully I can.
Yes, truly.
Yes, absolutely.
Come see us.
Wonderful. Break legs, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
And thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Wonderful. That was Marcus McWhorter, Harper Shiner Brown, Victoria Turner, No More De La Torre.
Ooh.
I know. Well, I wrote No More. All with St. Ed's, Mary Moody Northern Theater, She Kills Monster. For more information, it plays the 11th through the 27th. And
17th.
Yeah, my 7 looks
all
like
as well, all as well.
The 17th through the 27th. For more information, you may visit stedwards.edu/theater. And this is from Lovestruck the Musical, and this is called Player 2. We will be right back. It was late and I finished. We are back. You are listening to Offstage and on the Air with Lisa and Liz. Liz, we did it. It's done. We
Woohoo!
We didn't get to do our local section, but or our Today in Theater History, but it was a jam-packed show. We kind of knew it was going to be.
Yeah, we covered quite a bit, and we got to know everybody a little bit, you know?
We did, and I got to know you.
Oh, thank you.
And we had some fun.
It's not like we haven't seen each other before, but we got to talk on the radio together.
We see each other quite often. anyway, so it was really fun to have you play with me here today.
Thank you for having me.
And I should tell you, best wishes on Tubu Fest.
Thank you so much. We're very excited.
Tell folks one more time the web address to go to.
It's TUBUFEST.com, TubuFest.com.
Here's a quick quiz for you.
Yes.
TUBU is an acronym, as we discussed earlier.
Yes, it is.
Is FBI an acronym?
Yes, it is.
No, it's not. FBI is an initialism.
Interesting.
Acronyms you have to be able to say, like TUBU. Like scuba. Those are acronyms.
Right.
FBI, unless you say FIBI.
FIBI. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, I
wouldn't
want to say that.
Instead of LOL, he says LOL.
I've heard that too.
So for people that say LOL, it's an acronym. Anyway, you've done it. Coming up next is Tracy Schultz. Tracy is going to tell everybody what's new on his show called...
Oh. You were looking at me.
What's new?
What's
his show
new?
Is called What's New.
Yes, What's New?
Anyway, as promised, we're going to go out with a song from 13 Going on 30. And this song is called 13 going on 30. We will see you next week, and it's our membership drive next week, so it's not too late to go to koop.org right now. You can start giving this very moment.
And share the love. Tell everybody, you know, why you love KAOP and why it's important.
Share the love. And next week, you may learn about where the signal is.
Exactly.
I know where the signal is.
Where's the signal?
I don't know where the signal is. Oh. We'll see you next week, folks. The sights of the city.